You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Get Civical.
This is the podcast that breaks down politics, government structure, and dives into the context of current events, but in a super fun way. I'm Lizzie Stewart, comedian, feminist, and political junkie.
And I'm Arden Walentowski, former Senate intern, campaign staffer, and political strategist.
In this episode, we're talking about the interstate highway system.
So grab your truck convoy.
And let's get civical. Everybody.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome back to Let's Get Civical. I am, as you know, Lizzie Stewart.
I mean, who else would you be?
Who else could I possibly be?
Literally.
So many people. I could be a lot of people.
You do have multiple personalities. I feel like that could be a thing.
Thank you for saying that.
And I am Arden Walentowski.
Obviously. And today, what do we have to say about today? I feel
like we're thriving more than the last time we recorded.
We're in a better place.
We are in a much better place. We are in a healthier place.
Healthier place. I feel like last week's episode we started off with, we're in a bad mood.
We were not healthy emotionally. We were not ready for the world. I have a full cup of coffee. It is my second cup of the day.
Oh, yum. I just had my first, so it's coursing through my veins.
Great.
I slept well.
Great. Me too.
You know, it's sunny. It's huge.
Sunny.
Huge.
That is a big help.
And yeah, we're just taking each day at a time. But I'm excited for today's episode topic because it's very near and dear. Like, this subject is weirdly near and dear to me right now because, have I told you this? I don't know if I've told you this.
What are you doing?
Maybe I have. But for our honeymoon.
Oh, yes.
Kyle and I. Oh, I have told you this. So for the listeners who don't know, so I'm getting married this year, as you may or may not know. And our honeymoon, we decided, we were like torn between, oh, should we go abroad? And then we were like, well, we're broke, so we're not going to do that. So I was like, well, what can we do domestically that's like not stereotypically Hawaii?
Yeah.
And I was like, the idea came to me. It felt like it came to me in a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And I pitched it to fiance Kyle and he was like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided that we are going to take a trip on the mother road, mm-hmm. Route 66,
mm-hmm.
For our honeymoon for like 2-ish weeks.
Yes.
Hit the open road and go see the sights.
Listen, as somebody who has done 2-month-long road trips.
Sure, you love it.
With their significant other, I can tell you it is a blast.
I'm excited.
We're
excited.
So fun. They're like the stuff you expect to do, the stuff you never thought would come up, just like the little things that just happen every day.
Yeah.
Like the stuff that you think would be monotonous that you just kind of get into like a rigmarole of doing, the stuff you find, the places that surprise you. It is so much fun. And you're going to have a blast. You're going to have a blast.
We're going to have a blast.
And it's all brought to you by?
You say it.
Dwight D. Eisenhower's interstate highway system. Like, would not be possible without the highway system.
Totally. I think what's ironic, though, is that the interstate is what killed Route 66.
Oh, because, that's true.
Because it, like, it was so efficient that people stopped using Route 66. So in that way, it is kind of a bummer, but
yeah,
at the same time, very useful,
yes,
system to get people conveniently to and from places. I just wish it wasn't at the expense of something as, I think, romantic as Route 66.
Sure. You know?
Like, I wish that, like, we could live in a world where both are valuable. It's valuable to be efficient. And it's also valuable to take your time, you know?
Yeah.
And to take the long way around.
Yeah.
But I feel like we, especially I feel like in the States, I don't know as much about other countries, but like we value efficiency. We value you gotta go, get to the next thing.
Well, and we're gonna talk about this when we get into the notes because and we should get into them because they are lengthy today.
Okay.
They are lengthy. Well, not lengthy, but there's just more than we usually have because I didn't realize, I mean, obviously there's a lot of information on the construction of the interstate highway system. And we rely on her so much and we never think about her. But the idea for them was born out of the fact that like the roads were just so bad and so inefficient. It wasn't like we kind of had roads that kind of worked and meh, maybe we could have something better that would be, you know, a little bit, you know. We had like nothing. We had dirt that like,
I love it,
was a paved path because the horses had been there and then the buggies had been there and then like the Model T's had been there and that's all we had. And yeah, I mean,
and Dwight was like, we're done. Cutting this off.
We're cutting this off. And his story and how he and his like legit passion for the interstate highway system is not just a political passion for it. It was like he has a personal history with it, which is a story we'll talk about. So,
I mean, he's from like Kansas. Like he has to know.
But it also is a part of his his journey through the army and all of that and the world wars. So yeah, it's a whole, this is a much more interesting story than I thought it was going to be. And I was pleasantly surprised yet again about our American history. I also want to say, so I'll say that the notes from the sources for this episode are the National Archives.
Love.
The U.S. Army.
Love.
Yeah. And history.com, obviously.
Oh, okay.
And I will say that I was not thinking about doing this episode. The idea for this episode came from our beloved.
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 We love you.
We love you so much. Intern Houston.
He's amazing.
He's amazing. We love him so much. He has been with us basically since inception.
I mean, it feels like since the dawn of time.
It feels like since the dawn of time.
He is a crucial member of this team.
He is. He keeps a list of all the things we say we are going to do. he keeps that list for us and sent us this list the other day and was like, these are the things you guys have said you were going to do. And y'all, it's lengthy. And I was
lengthy. We just talk out of our asses when it comes to these things. Thank God for Houston.
In Houston, we trust. So Houston sent us this list of things we said we were going to do and we have not done. And on the list was the seven American engineering wonders. And I was like, oh my God, that's so.
Oh my God.
I was like, that's so old. And yes. And I was like, oh my God, what are they? And how many have we done? So far we've done two. So we're doing great, y'all. We're doing great.
Hell yeah.
Without even knowing, we're doing great. I mean, I think at some point we wondered out loud, like, how many there were and which ones there were and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
So we've done the Golden Gate Bridge.
Obviously. Great episode.
Great episode. We've done the Hoover Dam. Also a great episode. Also fun. Also fun. A great episode. So today we're doing the Interstate Highway System.
Which I'm excited about.
I'm so excited about.
We all use it.
We all use it. A lot of us, like, every day. Yeah. Left on the roster to do, and we will do at some point.
Ooh, how fun.
Yeah. Is the Kennedy Space Center.
Oh, my God.
I've never been to.
The one in, is that the one in Florida or the one in Houston?
Honey, I have no idea.
Because there's, wait, is it the one in Houston? Because I've been to the one in Houston, obviously.
My God.
I think, yeah, that one, the Kennedy Space Center is the one in Florida. What's the one in Houston?
Is this the Houston We Have a Problem Center?
Space Center Houston. Well, that's where they
like Capcom.
Do the, that's where they do the countdown. Like, that's where the control room is. But right. they, but it launches from, what's it called? From Florida.
Right. Cape Canaveral. So Kennedy Space Center and then the Panama Canal.
Okay, sure. Fun. Fun. With Teddy Roosevelt.
Yep. The Trans-Alaska Pipeline, which I know nothing about.
Oh, I bet that's oil.
And it sounds like oil. And then a super sad one, which we are saving to last because I can't touch it.
Oh, God. Don't say the World Trade Center.
It's the World Trade Center. So we got to do it from like an architecture perspective because.
Yeah. I don't need to contribute to the coverage of what happened on 9/11. No. I feel like everybody knows. Yeah. There's certain things that we don't have to do on this podcast, but I think the building of them would be really fascinating.
Yes. I want to do that. I want to do the building.
You know, I feel like we all know what happened. So that's that.
That's that. Yeah. But yeah. So at some point we'll do those. Shout out to Intern Houston for sending us this list. And y'all, we're going to work through it. It's extensive.
It's extensive. It's extensive.
We make a lot of promises.
I love how we're so obnoxious as to be like, ugh, what are we going to talk about this week? I have no ideas. And meanwhile, Sweet Houston sending us over like 30 ideas being like, pick one. Pick one of these.
Like, you have ideas. Do you not remember you said this? So the other thing we want to say about our beloved intern Houston is that he has written and directed and produced a play. The play is called My Husband. It is premiering at the New York Summer Theater Festival here in New York City at the Teatro Latia on the Lower East Side. It's running June 8th, 10th, and 11th. And we're going to share the link if you want to go see it. Lizzie and I are going to go see it. Houston is an amazing human being. We love him. He is the sweetest, kindest soul. And he keeps us afloat. And we support him.
And he's a talented writer.
He's a talented writer.
We're so proud.
We're so proud.
And like Arden said, I will put this link on our link tree in our Instagram at Let's Get Civical. So go there if you want to buy tickets. Because you should. You should. So this episode is dedicated to Houston, who we love very much. And what better way to celebrate Houston than to talk about the highway system, the bedrock of America.
The bedrock of our show.
The bedrock of America. Houston is our highway system.
It's true.
So let's jump into this episode talking about what we belovedly are calling the before times. So what we were dealing with pre-interstate system, pre-Dwight D. Eisenhower taking matters into his own hands. So today, there are more than 250 million cars and trucks in the United States, or almost one per person. So we're big on cars and trucks. Big on cars and trucks.
Yeah.
By contrast, at the end of the 19th century, there was just one motorized vehicle on the road for every 18,000 Americans. Not common. Mostly for the wealthy.
Yeah.
Those cars. At the same time, most of those roads were not made of asphalt or concrete, but of packed dirt or mud.
Sounds problematic.
Which, like, what's the difference between packed dirt and mud? Like, one's wet?
I think one's just wet. Packed dirt feels like dust flying.
Sure, sure.
You know?
Under these circumstances, driving a motor car was not simply a way to get from one place to the other. It was an adventure.
Yes.
This is coming from history.com.
Yes.
It was an adventure.
It's off-road and freewheeling and dealing.
Outside of cities and towns, there were almost no gas stations or even street signs, and rest stops were unheard of. The Brooklyn Eagle newspaper in 1910 once said, quote, automobiling was the last call of the wild. Caw, caw, caw.
Yes.
Beep, beep.
Not a 7-Eleven in sight.
This was about to change. In 1908, Henry Ford introduced the Model T, which we've done an episode about, you guys. Because it feels like we've done an episode about everything. So go listen to our episode on Ford's Model T, which was a dependable, affordable car that soon found its way into many American garages. By 1927, the year that Ford stopped making its, quote, tin Lizzie, I always love that, end quote, the company had sold nearly 15 million of them. At the same time, Ford's competitors had followed its lead and begun building cars for everyday people. So basically, this is when you start seeing cars on the road, not just for the wealthy people,
yeah,
but also for like middle class.
Right. They're not just like, they're not just toys. They're a way to get around.
Right. Automobiling was no longer an adventure or a luxury. It was a necessity. We are moving and grooving. We are shaking and baking. A nation of drivers needed good roads, but building good roads was, you guessed it, expensive.
Pricey.
In most cities and towns, mass transit, streetcars, subways, elevated trains were not truly public transportation. Instead, it was usually built and operated by private companies that made enormous infrastructural investments in exchange for long-term profits. Basically, private companies are building these things, mm-hmm, and it's not like government anything. Like, there's no regulation. It's just like...
they're like, here's a...
I'm a company...
Right. And we see a need. People need to get from point A to point B. The government isn't doing anything about it. People will pay.
Yeah, can't regulate it.
The people will pay to get from point A to point B because they their alternative is walking.
Sure.
Or horses. Let's give them a trolley car.
Yeah. And they can pay however much we want them to. However, automobile interests, such as car companies, tire manufacturers, gas station owners, and suburban developers, hoped to convince state and local governments that roads were a public concern. That way, they could get the infrastructure they needed without spending any of their own money. So the car companies don't want to do like the train companies are doing and like put all of their money on the line.
No.
The car companies are basically like, don't you guys want good roads? Somebody should pay for that. Government.
Mm-hmm.
Money, please. Their campaign was successful. In many places, elected officials agreed to use taxpayer money for the improvement and construction of roads. In most cases, before 1956, the federal government split the cost of road building with the states, with one exception being, of course, the New Deal, when federal agencies like the Public Works Administration and the Works Progress Administration put people to work building bridges and parkways, which we've done episodes on those too.
Yeah.
If you're interested in learning more about that. However, this funding arrangement did not get roads built fast enough to please the most ardent highway advocates. So this whole thing of like the government and the states kind of like doing it as like a duo was slow.
It was
and
slow.
Also like anytime we do it state by state, there's going to be like a mass difference between like what Texas is doing versus Oklahoma versus Louisiana and whatever
it's borders even,
Louisiana.
It's like still like today when you drive in from like Virginia to North Carolina and you cross that border and you're like, okay, we're going along. Gunk, gunk, gunk. Like you can feel and see when you cross that borderline just in the difference in the road.
It's how I feel crossing into New Jersey. I'm like, this is a dark place to drive.
This is dark.
Not because of the condition of the roads, but like just a sidebar, the quickest sidebar. My people who are in New Jersey, how do you drive on your interstate? There are, the signage is so confusing and so conflicting. Every exit has like six names. And the system, the roads don't make sense. I make a wrong turn every single time I step foot into the state of New Jersey. I feel as though I'm fighting for my life when I cross over into that state to drive.
My other grievance with the state of New Jersey and their roadways is that there is no immediate way to get back from whence you came except to go to the next exit or perhaps the next couple so that you can come back and go again.
Yeah. There's truly like I've missed exits. I have missed turns because things are very confusingly labeled.
Yeah.
And then it adds like 25 minutes to my journey because I can't like.
No.
Oh, my God. It's so frustrating.
So frustrating. If we go upstate, I would absolutely rather take the Palisades if it tells me, even if it says this road it is going to add 15 minutes to your drive. I'm like, you know what, Google lady? I'll take that 15 minutes. Because you know what I don't want to do is sit on the 4 in New Jersey and perhaps end up in Pennsylvania because I took a wrong turn somewhere. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, it's no good.
I'll stay in New York.
Good. Shout out to our listeners in New Jersey.
Love you.
You are fighting for your life every single day.
Every single day.
Every single day.
So let's talk about these people who wanted to build an interstate highway system.
Let's.
So among these proponents, one of the loudest was the man who would become president, Army General Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Love it.
So we're going to take it back a little bit so we can understand Mr. Dwight D. Eisenhower's passion for the roadways.
For the roads.
It runs deep.
Love it.
And it is not unlike Lizzie's passion for Route 66.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. So in the summer of 1919, just months after the end of World War I, an expedition of 81 Army vehicles, otherwise known as a truck convoy. Hot. Set out from Washington, D.C. for a trip across the country to San Francisco. The convoy's purpose was to road test various Army vehicles and to see how easy or how difficult it would be to move an entire army across the North American continent.
Sure.
Yeah.
They test it out.
They just came back from the war and they were like, y'all, what if this happened to us?
You know, I bet they were over there, right?
I bet
they were fighting the fight and what the sort of main players of the army figured out was, wow. Because this is like, this is one of the first wars where we're really transitioning from like horseback to vehicles, right? Yes. And I feel like they were over there being like, wow, this is a lot harder than we thought it was.
Yeah.
We got to get our ducks in a row.
Yeah.
Because God knows, like, yes, the war is over, but there's still the threat. Like, is it over?
Right.
You know,
and this isn't the last war.
And just get our ducks in
a row. Like, we know there's going to be another war at some point.
Right.
Like, come on. Humans are humans.
Yeah.
Let's call a spade
humans
a spade.
Humans are humans. We're going to do this again.
We're going to do this again. So let's be prepared. So they're driving these tanks, this truck convoy. They're not tanks, but like truck convoy across the country from D.C. to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
The convoy assumed wartime conditions, damage or destruction to railroad facilities, bridges, tunnels, and the like, and imposed self-sufficiency on itself. Averaging about 6 miles an hour or 58 miles a day, that is so slow.
That is so slow.
That is so, oh my God.
We could do 10. If I'm in that car, I'm just like.
You can't see me. You can't see Lizzie, but she's just rocking, about to die.
Just rocking back and forth. 6 miles an hour? I can walk faster.
You could. You could get to California faster than they did if you walked it.
I could get to California faster than these guys.
Yeah. The trucks snaked their way from Washington up to Pennsylvania and into Ohio, then due west across the agricultural Midwest, the Rockies, and into California. Generally, it followed the Lincoln Highway, later known as US 30, arriving in San Francisco 62 days later, and 3,251 miles later.
I mean, it's no wonder. I know we're going to get more into it, but like, it's no wonder to me that Dwight D. Eisenhower went through this experience and was like, there's got to be a better way.
Right. Because if you didn't walk away from that being like, there's got to be a better way,
like,
you're insane.
He's just sitting in that slow little truck for 62 days, 2 months, with nothing better to do than to think about how absolutely inefficient this is. No wonder he came up with a fully fledged, thought out interstate system. That man had nothing but time, just sort of slowly riding in that little truck.
He literally was like, more lanes, make them even.
Make them even.
The fuck is the problem?
We also need it to be like, I'm sure the ground wasn't sturdy enough to, like, you don't want to go 60 miles an hour.
No.
When there's like craters and potholes and mud or dirt.
Right.
You know, like, that's why they're having to go so slow, is because the roads are also like treacherous for vehicles to drive on. And I'm sure they're having to like swerve and then go back. It's like, and he's literally watched me. He's in the car just like, just pissed off.
Just
pissed off. This is amazing. Oh man. If you want something done, put a guy in a slow truck for 62 days and watch what happens. This is truly, you know what this became?
World.
He's literally in an actual literal think tank. That's all he could do. What else is there to do? I know. Because even if you're the one driving and you have something to do to like stimulate your mind, you're still going 6 miles an hour. I think that would be more frustrating to be like, I just want to Thelma and Louise this truck off a cliff. 6 miles an hour? Are you joking?
Are you joking? Oh my God.
Yikes.
Oh my God.
We're going to take a quick break for a little word from our sponsors. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
The convoy involved 24 army officers, 258 enlisted men. Enlisted men. They brought so many people. They brought so many people. One of those officers, a young lieutenant colonel, went along as a tank corps observer, quote, partly for a lark and partly to learn, he wrote decades later. Hint, hint, that's Dwight D. Eisenhower. Dwight.
Yeah.
Quote, we were not sure it would be accomplished at all.
Yeah.
No shit. Nothing of the sort had ever been attempted, close quote. The convoy made a lasting impression on the young Dwight D. Eisenhower and stoked in him an interest in good roads that would last for decades.
No one will ever suffer the way I suffered in those 62 days. If it's the last thing I do. I love that he was in this truck just sort of going 6 miles an hour, sitting there for 62 days, and he thought to himself, nobody should have to suffer like this. No man, woman, or child should ever have to suffer like this way.
No. This is unbearable. A generation later, during World War II, Dwight D. Eisenhower was still thinking about good roads as a supreme Allied commander in Europe, where he oversaw the invasion of Western Europe and the defeat of Nazi Germany, which was able to move quickly on the autobahns running throughout Germany. Autobahns being the roads.
Oh my god, he's like Fast and Furious in Germany, like.
he's watching the Germans be like zipping all over the place on their roads, carrying out their horrible, you know, genocide.
Yeah,
being like, look at these motherfuckers on their roads.
They're going 20 miles an hour.
Look at all the, I mean, they're doing horrible things and they got roads. Like, we need fucking...
They have roads.
They have roads.
This is crazy.
Later, as president of the United States, Eisenhower cited the 1919 convoy, where he's going 6 miles an hour in his buggy, and his World War II experiences, to persuade Congress to enact the Federal Aid Highway Act of 1956, creating what is now known as the Interstate Highways System. Quote, the old convoy had started me thinking about good two-lane highways, he wrote years later in his popular memoir, At Ease. But Germany made me see the wisdom of broader ribbons across the land.
I love that his whole life, I guarantee you, at every dinner party, Dwight found somebody that he had never met before, like somebody new, and was like, do you know, in 1919... And then once he said that, all of his friends were like, oh my God, not the convoy story again. Dwight. He was in a convoy. It was 62 days. Like, this is something that he... This became his whole personality, was this 62-day convoy.
This is his party story. Absolutely.
I imagine that once he became president, he gets to Congress, he starts his, like, politicking and he, you know, making his deals. And I bet Congress was like, Dwight... We will give you this interstate system if we never have to hear the convoy story again. If you promise us now that we do not have to hear about this, we'll do whatever it takes.
We'll do it.
We'll do whatever it takes to get you to stop talking about this convoy.
But I don't think you understand. It was 62. No?
62 days.
No.
No?
Got no, it. No. Got you it. Sign on the dotted line? That we'll give story? You,
here's bye-bye. A blank check.
Blank check. Bye-bye.
Yeah. So now let's talk about the Clay Committee, because you know we don't do anything in this country without a committee.
You got to study
gotta
it.
You got to get a committee.
You got to study
You have an
it.
Idea? Let me get the committee. Instrumental in the logistic success following the D-Day landing was Lieutenant General Lucius Clay. Okay. Of the Clay Committee.
Mm-hmm.
He was a key aide to Eisenhower during the war and later when Eisenhower ascended to the presidency. In 1954, Eisenhower appointed Clay to head the President's Advisory Committee on the National Highway System. So he's like, this is when the ideas are percolating. He's like, Lucius, you know how I feel about the roads. Yeah. And Lucius is like, please don't start. I know. What do you need?
The convoy.
What do you need?
Yeah.
And he was like, I want a committee to figure out the roads. And Lucius was like, whatever will make you stop talking about the roads, I will do it.
Yes. I will take
so
on
now he's the
roads.
President of this committee right. to talk about the roads.
Yeah.
The so-called Clay Committee began work to develop a national highway plan, and its outcome was a report to Congress on the National Highway Program. The resulting, quote, grand plan, end quote, obligated $50 billion of federal funds over 10 years to build a vast system of interconnected highways. The report cited 36,000 traffic fatalities each year and the multi-billion dollar effect on the economy. It was also thought poorly maintained roads adversely affected the economy by increasing transportation costs, which were ultimately borne by the consumer.
So it's like people are dying.
People are dying.
Because the roads are bad. Not good.
It's bad for the economy.
It's costing us money.
Which people care more about than if people are dying.
Not good.
I love that it's like people are dying, but even worse, the economy.
Right. It's the economy, stupid.
Additionally, the pervasive threat of nuclear attack in the United States called for the ability to execute the emergency evacuation of large cities and the quick movement of troops essential to national defense. So they're like, look, the U.S. is so obnoxious, right? Like, the United States introduces nuclear weapons to the world, right? Like, the use of nuclear weapons. And then they turn around and they're like, due to the threat of nuclear weapons that we have brought to the world, we have to fix the roads in case nuclear weapons, once again, that only we have used against other people, comes to our doorstep. So let's get this figured out. Like, how obnoxious are we?
Also, please see the 1919 convoy when we tried to do this before and it went really bad.
And then there was this convoy. I've got to tell you. It's so bad. 62 so days. Can bad. You imagine that? Can you imagine 62 so days going 6 miles an hour? Like, you honestly, a nuclear attack would be preferable to 62 days on the road. Lastly, improvements in transportation must keep up with the expected increase in U.S. population. This is all, again, from the Clay Committee's report. Moreover, road improvement is essential to the economy, once again, and an efficient use of taxpayer money. So those are the highlights of the report, just to kind of summarize. So number one, people are dying. Yeah. Lots of fatalities on the roads as they currently are. Big concern. Number two, bigger concern, it's suffering. The economy is suffering because it's not efficient to get to and from places, and that makes things more expensive. Number three, nuclear attack. We dropped bombs and now we could possibly have bombs dropped on us. Concern, we need to be able to evacuate.
We need to be able to evacuate, although it's not exactly clear how getting away from the nuclear bomb, like their nuclear, like their.
Sure. I mean, well, it's the same theory of like duck and cover, right? Where it's like, yeah, get under your table.
Sure.
For the bomb.
That'll save you.
You know, like, it doesn't matter where you are.
Right, right, right.
And then finally, for the other point that they're making is that the soldiers are back. Everybody's getting down to it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a boom in population. And that's the highlights of the report.
So then they entered a testing phase.
Well, sure. You got to test.
You got to test. Of course, it was conducted by the Department of Defense because... fundamentally, I think they were like, yeah, 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 the cars, the civilians, great, economy, great. But really, they were like, they were worried about nuclear war and
sure.
Eisenhower, you know, was a general. And this all came from a convoy and his time in World War II. So it's
yeah.
like, this is where this is living. So they enter a testing phase. A large-scale urban evacuation drill. Conducted in June of 1955, drove home the importance of an evacuation plan. So they decided to conduct a testing phase. They decided to evacuate an urban population to yep. see how...
And this is pre-highway system, like with things as is.
They're like, nuclear war, now that we've introduced this bomb, you know, we had to do it, but now it's out there. Now we're going to have, like, we should just have a plan in place. So let's, like, try and evacuate an urban center. It did not go well. The ensuing confusion, coupled with crowded evacuation routes, seemed to make President Eisenhower's case for the international highway system.
See?
It didn't work. There's no place
now, for them to go. Now imagine you're going 6 miles an hour.
Right. With children and wives who are like.
So bad.
The administration was serious about the role of a uniform system of roads for national defense and directed Department of Defense involvement. When the international highway system began in earnest, a testing facility was created in central Illinois to evaluate pavement, road standards, and construction techniques, among other things. So, like, they did it right. They're like, all right.
Yeah, just, I'm like, all about this. I'm like, they didn't just lay stuff down. No. They were like, all right, let's go figure out what the best stuff is to use for these roads.
Right. They weren't just like.
I'm all for it.
I'm all
Dwight's
for it.
Dwight's thorough. This is a passion project.
Right. He's like, because he knew. He knew from the 62 days. He's like, let me tell you what does not work. Dirt.
Dirt, mud.
Dirt, mud. You got to watch out for everything that's out there. Boulders, mountains, hills. We're probably going to need to blast.
Yeah.
You know, like we got to make sure it lasts a while. So they're testing. They're testing pavement types, road standards, construction techniques, lots of things.
Mm-hmm.
The Department of Defense contributed equipment and personnel for the tests. Military leaders knew from their experiences into previous world wars that roads were vital to national defense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Over a 2-year period, Army trucks drove 17 million miles on test roads. That's a lot.
I mean, they're thorough. I appreciate it.
This is great. Some vehicles carried blocks of concrete in an effort to see how long a 24-ton truck would take to destroy roads and bridges. Great.
Okay,
great.
Great.
Because you know what?
Zoom back and forth.
I would happily drive over that bridge then. Like, if it could hold that, great.
Yeah.
Great.
Great. I'm all for it. So let's talk about passing the law that really got the ball rolling, that made this dream, all this work that we've been doing, all this testing that we've been doing, a reality. It took several years of wrangling, but a new Federal Aid Highway Act passed in June 1956. The law authorized the construction of the 41,000-mile network of interstate highways that would span the nation. It also allocated $26 billion, that's a billion with a B, to pay for them. Under the terms of the law, the federal government would pay 90% of the cost of expressway construction. The money came from an increased gasoline tax, now 3 cents a gallon instead of 2, that went into a non-divertible highway trust fund. The new interstate highways were controlled access expressways with no at-grade crossings. That is, they had overpasses and underpasses instead of intersections. So you get to just keep going straight.
Right.
If you don't want to get off. If you need to cross over, you'll go under it mm-hmm. or you'll go over
but
it.
You can't just join it at any point. Can't go you through gotta it. Get on and you can get off. Mm-hmm. But like there's no just like willy-nilly walk it like getting yeah. on it. It's not just a random, yeah. it's not a traditional road.
They were at least 4 lanes wide and were designed for high speed driving. They were intended to serve several purposes. Eliminate traffic congestion, replace what one highway advocate called, quote, undesirable slum areas, end quote. Okay.
Problematic.
Make coast-to-coast transportation more efficient and make it easy to get out of big cities in case of an atomic attack.
Yeah.
I love how they just keep tacking that one at the end, right? They're like, we want to make it easier to get to and fro. It's better for the economy, better for farmers to get their product to mm-hmm. market, and nuclear attack. That's it. Just those things.
Just in case. Just in case. So it wasn't all peachy keen jelly bean. There was some opposition to the interstate highway system. Not at first, but once things got underway, people were like, oh, don't know that I like all of this building.
Sure.
Seems messy. So when the Interstate Highway Act first passed, like I said, most Americans did support it. Soon, however, the unpleasant consequences of all that road building began to show. Most unpleasant of all was the damage the roads were inflicting on the city neighborhoods in their path. They displaced people from their homes, sliced communities in half, and led to abandonment and decay in city after city. People began to fight back. The first victory for the anti-road forces took place in San Francisco, where in 1959, the Board of Supervisors stopped the construction of the double-decker Embarcadero freeway along the waterfront. During the 1960s, activists in New York City, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., New Orleans, and other cities managed to prevent road builders from eviscerating their neighborhoods. As a result, numerous urban interstates end abruptly. Activists call these roads Roads to Nowhere.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like basically, you know, it's not as though they're building these highways on just like flat farmland. Like they're truly like running through towns that already exist. And right. if you're in the way of the road, like they're going to make you move. Right. They're going to eminent domain the shit
right.
out of your home.
Right.
And then who wants to live next to a highway? It then immediately devalues.
Right. I mean, they are
your
running.
Property, your town, your city.
Right. They are running across vast stretches of farmland, but the whole point of them is to get people out of the cities in the event of the atomic attack.
Of course.
Yeah. And for farmers to get their goods to the city because people need to buy the goods. So, of course, the highways need to go to the city.
Right. It's a mess. It's a mess. I get it. So let's conclude talking about how it's aged. This is an old system now by our standards. It's been around for, golly, do that math, 60, 70 years. Despite the convenience and ease of movement, the IHS is showing its age. When funding was appropriated in 1956, planners knew that at some point, roads, bridges, and various infrastructure would deteriorate. I mean, these are materials that don't, you know, nothing lasts forever. You have to upkeep it. The international highway system was expected to last only into the 1970s, when improvements would be needed, which is not a long time before improvements are needed. I mean, that's like 10 years, basically.
Yeah.
The 1956 appropriation ran out in 1972, and current funding is sustained by the motor fuel tax, which is funneled into a trust fund. So we're still paying for the roads the same way we always have been through this tax on gasoline. The international highway system's disrepair was highlighted in July of 2007 with an unfortunate tragedy in Minnesota. On one summer day near Minneapolis, a section of a steel arch bridge on Interstate 35 collapsed into the Mississippi River. The accident killed 13 people and injured another 145. I mean, this is everybody's nightmare when you're crossing a bridge. You'd think, like, what if this bridge fell?
Right.
What would I do?
And I'm in a car,
you know? And it fell. The accident remains one of the worst bridge failures in U.S. history, and it highlights the poor condition of the nation's infrastructure. At the time of the incident, approximately 150,000 of the nation's nearly 600,000 bridges, quote, were considered either structurally deficient or functionally obsolete. And that's according to a 2012 ABC News report. I don't like my bridges to be functionally obsolete.
No, that does not sound
good. We talk
good.
About this.
Yes.
We talk about this. We I just want the bridges to be okay.
The bridges to be okay. I want the buildings to be okay. The fire escapes to be okay. Things.
Everything to be okay.
Buildings and structures that I live in, cross.
Okay.
That I need to escape onto, need to be in or on or cross to get somewhere. Yeah. I would like them to be structurally sound.
But we have to upkeep our infrastructure.
It is
in
true.
In order for that to be the case.
It is true.
So I always hear like a big buzz around infrastructure. Biden has a big buzz around infrastructure. Yeah. It's like we actually do have to put money into the roads.
Yeah, we have to put money into the roads. Collapse. There's always like a big buzz around the infrastructure bill.
You guys, I don't even know. Like, support the roads. Support infrastructure.
You know, support the roads.
Support the roads. I just want them to be
okay.
When
do we want roads? When do we want them? Now.
Now. But that is our episode on the interstate highway system. Shout out to Dwight D. Eisenhower and that 1919 convoy. If he hadn't sat in a slow ass truck for 62 days, you wouldn't be able to get from point A to point B in half the time. So be glad that was all he could talk about. with that said, that's our episode. And as always, we love you so, so much. And if you like what you heard, please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Let's Get Civical. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe to us. We love you so, so much, and we will see you next Wednesday.
Goodbye.